Welcome to episode 119 of Breakout Culture. I'm Charlotte Metcalf. I'm the associate editor at Country and Town House.
I'm Ed Vasey. I'm the cultural editor at Country and Town House. And this week we're focusing on Newcastle to report on the opening of a very exciting play that's going to be on a national tour soon.
So don't panic if you live in Devon, because the play is going to travel as far south as Exeter in July. The play we're talking about is the first ever stage adaptation of Ken Loach's and Paul Laverty's multi-award winning 2016 film, I, Daniel Blake, which memorably scooped the Palme d'Or at Cannes as well as a BAFTA.
Yes, now I'm a huge fan of Ken Loach, but even if you're not, I defy anyone who saw I, Daniel Blake not to have been moved by the relentlessly cruel negligence of the benefits system that the film's central character found himself caught up in. The star of that film, Dave Johns, who played Daniel Blake, won Best Actor at the British Independent Awards and Best Newcomer at the Empire Awards. And he was so taken with the film that he's now adapted it into a stage play. Dave Johns has won numerous awards as an actor, writer and stand-up comedian, and has written a lot for theatre and radio, including the stage adaptation of The Shawshank Redemption. We're delighted Dave Johns is with us this morning to tell us all about this new play. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Nice to see you.
It's nice to have you on, Dave. So we know the opening run at Northern Stage in Newcastle is sold out, and the press night on the 31st of May received rapturous applause and fabulous reviews. In fact, I just read one in the Times this morning. It's obviously striking a real chord, and that's exactly what you set out to do with this adaptation, Dave Johns. Remind our listeners about the premise of the story. Tell us how you've updated it from 2016.
Well, you know, I was very fortunate enough to play Daniel Blake in Ken Loach's original film. A few years ago, I had a chat with Ken and Paul Laverty, who wrote the screenplay, about bringing it to the stage. Then the pandemic hit and we had to put all that on hold. But yeah, we felt that when the film was made in 2016, it hit a nerve with people in this country and in Europe as well. And I felt that, you know, the time is right to bring it to the stage, because I think the only thing that's changed is the on hold music that Daniel has to listen to when he's trying to access the DWP. So we thought it was time to do it.
And you got the director, Mark Calvert. He's done months of volunteering in local food banks to look at what is happening on the ground now. And he wants the audience to feel angry and outraged. That's what he sort of brought to the adaptation.
Yeah, well, we took the cast along for a day to the local food bank, and they sort of helped out, and they met lots of people who access the food bank. They met a young woman with three kids who a couple of years ago was actually donating to the food bank. And now the food bank is basically how she survives from day to day. And the cast were very, very moved by all the stories. So it was a very good exercise, because they know the story that they're telling now, and they were very engaged with it. So, yeah, it was a very harrowing and moving day. But in that, there was a lot of humour as well, which the play has and which the film has, because when people are having hard times, humour is the one thing that can help you get through that, you know?
Can you remind us, Dave, just quick run through of what the plot is for anyone who hasn't seen the film?
Daniel Blake is a guy in his late 50s who has a heart attack. Basically, is told by his doctor that he can't go back to work. He applies for sickness benefit. He is asked to attend a work assessment capability meeting, and he doesn't get the correct points. So he's told he needs to go back to work or to claim job seeker's allowance. And while he's doing that, he has to look for work, and he enters this Kafkaesque sort of nightmare. And along the way, he befriends a young family, Katie and her two kids, who have been living in a hostel in London, who are moved out of London. And the only accommodation that can be offered for social housing is up in the northeast. So they leave their support network and they get sent up to the northeast, and they meet in the job centre, where Katie is sanctioned because she's been late because she's just arrived in Newcastle and was late for half an hour. And they form this little sort of friendship, if you like. Dan becomes an uncle to the kids and probably a father figure to Katie. It's a simple story, but it's very harrowing, you know?
Well, I know that film was deeply harrowing, but I gather, Dave, that one of the changes you've slightly made is you've put more emphasis on the good things that come out of that relationship between Katie and Daniel. Is that right?
Well, yeah, because, you know, Katie's a stranger to the city. She doesn't know anybody. Daniel is he's basically a decent bloke, you know. He befriends them. He helps to help them to sort out their flat and try and repair their flat, and they become this type of nuclear little family. You know what I mean? I mean, the whole story is about poverty and hunger and the nightmare of being trapped in a benefit system, you know?
I know one of the things you've been talking about is how it's actually got a lot worse since 2016, and that's why it's drawing such huge support, and it's already sold out in Newcastle, isn't it?
Well, it was sold out 6 weeks before we started rehearsals, and it's been incredible. I mean, you know, we've had six shows now, and we get spontaneous standing ovations every night from the audience.
We're also going to be joined by Davy Nellist. He plays Daniel Blake in this new adaptation. You'll have seen him as Mike Stanford in Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch. He was also in John Preston's brilliant TV series on Stonehouse with Matthew McFadden. What part did you play there, Dave?
I played Matthew's cellmate.
Oh, yes. I've just realised I've seen you in everything. You've been in Billy Elliot, War Horse, The Curious Incident, The Dog of the Night Time, and more, all of which I've seen. So good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Davey, and it's lovely to have you with us. Now, we've already been hearing from Dave about how much the audience is enjoying this production, but it must have been quite a challenge for you to step into Dave's shoes to take on this role and be watched by Ken Loach and Paul Laverty while you were doing it.
Absolutely. It was daunting at the beginning, but having Dave in the room during rehearsals was great for me. I've known Dave a while. We had a lovely team. It was more about the team ethic after a while than just solo performances. But yeah, having Ken in, who's a hero of mine, so I was nervous to perform in front of him, but he couldn't have been nicer, and Paul Laverty to have their seal of approval. But also, I suppose more importantly for me and a lot of the cast, we had we did a lot of research at the West End Food Bank, and we had about five of the people who volunteer down there, and the coordinator Carol came to see us on Wednesday at the press night, and they gave it their seal of approval, which was probably even more important.
I read somewhere that when the film came out in 2016, there was one food bank in Newcastle, and now there are seven. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, things have got worse. And what I'm really interested in is when you go on tour, you know, you're going to some pretty posh places, you know, like the Yvon Arno in Guildford and things. I wonder how different it's going to be in
Yeah, I can answer that because, you know, when we made the film in 2015 and it went to Cannes in 2016, I mean, you know, Cannes Film Festival. I mean, you know, you know, you're doing this film about poverty and sort of people struggling, and then you're getting your photographs taken when there's massive big yachts in Cannes, you know. but in a way, that's good because, you know, if you're working class or if you're somebody who's struggling, you know how pretty dire it is. And it's nice to, and sometimes you're preaching to people who go, yeah, I know how terrible this is, but it's nice to maybe, I mean, I went to the Bahamas, to the film festival in the Bahamas, and you know, and I said to Ken, should I be really going to this film festival? And he went, yeah, you should be showing people who don't know what this struggle is. You know, the thing that, one thing that hit me when we were at the food bank was a young one of the volunteers was sort of talking about sort of the people that use the food bank, and she said this young girl came in and she was getting her food, and she got some own brand baked beans, and she said, "Oh, have you not got any Heinz? Because my kids prefer Heinz baked beans." And that hit me, and they were a bit like, you know, it was a bit sort of, you know, well, you know, you should just be grateful for what you're getting. And for me, the thing about this is, you know, just because you're poor, your choice shouldn't be taken away from you. Actually, to go to these places is a really, I think, is a good thing, you know, to go to theatres that you wouldn't necessarily find would have something like this, you know.
Presumably the theatres take a view on whether their audiences want to see it, so they're kind of leaning into it.
Change only ever comes if it sort of starts to affect, you know, middle-class people and working, you know, people who are working. And I think, you know, suddenly people are finding that, you know, it's not just them, it could be me as well, you know. I mean, it's no doubt it's political, you know. I mean, like there's no doubt about it, but you don't hit people over the head with it, you know. You just try and present it as honestly as you can, and then you let people make up their mind what they feel. If it makes them angry or it doesn't make them feel anything, I think that's why art like theatre and cinema and books have power, because as long as they're not preaching, you know. And so I think politicians should come and see this, and then they might, you know. I mean, you know, we start the play with Damien Green. When he was asked in the House of Commons about Daniel Blake, he said, "No, I haven't seen the film, but I've seen the trailer many times. And I would like to say to the Honourable Lady chuntering from the opposite part of the House, the opposition, that it is a work of fiction." And that's how we start. That's how we start the play. And I can tell you, it isn't a work of fiction. I've had people come up to me to this day and say, "This happened to my mum, this happened to my dad, it happened to my daughter." And I've talked to these people in the food banks, and it certainly is not a work of fiction.
No, and you've been very keen to sort of advertise that. I mean, there's banners everywhere in your promotion saying this is not fiction. And I'm interested to know how the students are reacting to this, because the theatre in Newcastle is right on the campus, isn't it? So I'm interested to know what young people who are not necessarily from Newcastle, who might be coming to see the play, think of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I think that a lot of people are engaged with it. I think it has people moved. It had people in tears the other night. It has people laughing because it's human. It has people angry, you know. And I think that is what good art should do, you know.
One thing that Dave didn't mention the introduction with, that Daniel is recently bereaved. He's lost his wife Molly, who's struggled with mental health issues. I lost both my parents last year. My mum had a lot of mental health issues, so that side of things I was probably bringing into the rehearsal room. I care, as Dave does, I know, passionately about the issues, and I just think it's the people that you're acting opposite that make it differently. So Bryony Corrigan, who plays Katie, and Jodie Wilde, who plays Daisy, they are bringing to me their choices, which automatically inform mine. And also, you know, a play is very different from a film, in that on a film you might be filming 1 or 2 minutes per day. On this, you can do large chunks. So you're so immersed in the character, up to the point where I'll probably need a lot of therapy after this.
And when the director, Mark Calvert, says that he wants to inspire activism, I mean, interestingly, he said he was influenced by Led by Donkeys. And we had recently Hassan Akkad, who did that amazing thing on the White Cliffs of Dover, on the podcast. So what sort of, has he talked about that at all? What would he like audiences to go off and do after seeing this, do you think?
I mean, I can't really speak for Mark. I mean, he knows what he feels. I mean, I know what I want from it. So what I want from it is, I want people to feel that, yeah, I want them to feel angry. I want them to question why it is that, you know, I mean, this has been going on since Dickensian times, Dickens wrote about, you know, and it's so frustrating when you see that, you know, we still haven't got this right, you know. Social housing, I try to cover that in the play, and I want people to question why we aren't building real, proper social housing. We lived in a council house, and my dad was a joiner. We had a garden, we had 3 bedrooms. It was on a really, you know, a nice estate. You know, if you've got somewhere where you feel safe and you can live, you can build your life from that. And for me, I want people to be asking questions. And I don't, like I said before, I don't care what government is in power. You should hold all politicians' feet to the fire if they're not coming up with what they should be doing, and that is serving the people.
It's really interesting because we had the guys from Sheffield who put on that play Standing at the Sky's Edge about building that, you know, very, very idealistic post-war housing with a real sense of community and properly trying to build streets in the sky. And that seems completely, that sense of building communities seems to have completely gone out of the equation, except at a very kind of high-end, unaffordable...
I mean, when we filmed Daniel Blake, it was in a place called Biker, and that was where I was brought up when I was a kid. And then we rehearsed in Biker, and walking past there now, and the Biker Wall, which is a big sort of like housing project, and that was built. And then the houses are behind that, where actually my street was. They're all run by it's a housing association that keep that run it, and they are from London. And the place is just run down, you know. It's like the litter's not picked up. There's no sort of like, you know, there's an old mattress that was in the middle of the street, and it's got a sense of it being broken. And that's because you don't have anybody there. It's not even run by Newcastle Council now. It's run by a housing association that are miles away, and I don't care. I mean, that is just wrong, you know. And you have people who are just feel as though they're forgotten, you know. And we need proper social housing. That's my big sort of stance on this, you know. And that's why I've tried to talk about it a little bit in the play, you know.
And of course, Biker is where Ant and Dec launched their career.
Yeah, Biker Grove. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the place where they filmed the youth club in Biker Grove was in the west end of the city. It was miles away from Biker, but it was so weird to, you know, film there with Ken on the streets that I used to live on when I was a kid, and then go back to rehearse there for this, you know. It's like this sort of, you know, it all come full circle, you know. It was really sort of, and it gives it more poignancy to me, you know.
Dave, you'll have to write a new play about it.
yeah, build more council houses.
Is there anything you've got your eye on, though? Because you're no stranger to an adaptation. I mean, you did do The Shawshank Redemption as a stage play.
Yes. I mean, The Shawshank Redemption came about because when we were up in Edinburgh, in 2003, we did a comedian's version of 12 Angry Men. And it was such a massive big hit. Bill Bailey was in it, and it was all comedians. And we were looking for something to do. It was one of my favourite films. And me and Owen O'Neill, who's a fellow comedian who was in Shawshank, we were talking one day, and we said, I don't know if the rights are available. So we rather, you know, like you do things naively, we said, well, let's get in touch with Stephen King's agent. And we phoned Stephen King's agent up and said, are the rights available for the, because it's a short story before it was a film. And I can't remember how much we paid for it, for an option on it for a year. And we wrote the script to go up to Edinburgh. And then we were in Dublin, we were at a festival, Kilkenny, Kilkenny Comedy Festival. And we talked, and this Irish producer said, that's my favourite. Have you got the rights to this? Are you writing the script? We went, yeah. So they saw the script and they said, we'll produce it and we'll put it on the Gaiety in Dublin. So from this little thing that we're going to do with comics, it became this massive big. and it's still running now, you know, still running now. So it's, you
so
know.
Dave, given your background, how did you become an actor?
Me, well, I'm a stand-up comic who was fortunate enough to bump into Ken Loach. I was a bricklayer, working on a building sites from when I was 15. I was always quite funny and I was always looking for some way out of working on building sites. And I went to the Tyne Theatre and I became a fly floorman, you know, who flies in all the scenery at the Tyne Theatre. And I went down to the Comedy Store in 86 or 87 with some friends, and I saw what they were doing there, and I thought, and they had a restaurant at the corner of by the theatre that wasn't doing much. So I said, "Can I open a comedy club?" And they went, "Yeah, but we're not going to pay you any money." I went, "Oh no!" I says, "You can take the bar, and I'll find the money for the act." In 1987, my first bill was Jack D and Joe Brand, and they both said, "We want 100 quid each." And I was going, "How am I going to find 200 quid to pay these?" So I booked them. And they said, "Who's comparing?" And I said, "Well, I don't." And I said, "Oh, I'll do it." So I went on and I compared the show, and I put leaflets out around the university, and all the university students came. And I managed to scrape the fee for them, and I did all the and I did the comparing, and I found I was good at it. And so I became a comedian. And I was a comedian for about 30 odd years. And then at the age of 59, the guy who produced 12 Angry Men said, "Oh, Ken Loach is looking for a guy to be in his new film." When Daniel Blake won the BAFTA, at the BAFTAs, the casting director said to me, "Oh, I've still got the tweet you sent," and I'd forgotten it. And she read it out and it said, "Hi, my name's Dave Johns. I'm a 59-year-old stand-up comic. I hear Ken Loach is doing a film in Newcastle. I'd be up for that." And she said, that made them laugh. And so I came in and I did the auditions. I did 5 auditions and you know, did a Ken Loach film. Thought, oh, this is cool. I thought Kes was cool. I thought, oh. And then it just, when it got to Cannes, it just went crazy. It won the Palme d'Or. We became the toast of Cannes, which was really weird. Me and Hayley wandering around like two little kids, and all, you know, Juliet Binoche, and you know, and sort of like a Danton Sutherland, like coming over, and I remember we were standing one day and I thought, that's Donald Sutherland, he's coming over. And he got about a couple of yards from me and he looked at me and he went, "Dave." So I just went, "Donald," you know, as if we were old pals, you know. And it just went from then, and I got a film career at the age of 59, which is insane. And I've just made
So just going back to you, Davey, quickly, how did you get the part?
I was doing another play in Newcastle. So just met Mark and Dave and a couple of the producers, and then we got called back in groups. So I actually went in with Brian, who's in the production. And yeah, I mean, the funny thing is working in Newcastle, and I knew it nearly everybody that went up for the part. You know, they're all pals of mine, and that's how sometimes it works. And then they get the part, sometimes I might get the part. But it was a proper thrill to get it and to work back. I don't live in Newcastle anymore, unfortunately. I live in East London. But to come back and to do the play set in my region for my region was fantastic. And I get to go to the match.
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, I think huge good luck with it. I mean, it sounds absolutely amazing, and good luck with the tour. And we really, you know, for those of us who can't get to Newcastle, as I said at the beginning, don't panic, because it is going to be on quite an extensive tour all over the country. So very good luck. And I'm sure everybody will be reading the rapturous reviews that are coming out now. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you.
No, it's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
That's it for another episode of Breakout Culture, but please don't forget to visit countryandtownhouse.com, where you'll find the latest edition of the magazine and our sister podcast, House Guest with Carol Annette, in which she talks to some of the most fascinating and influential names in interior design.
Do listen in next week, as Carol is going to be talking to the legendary and prolific British product and lighting designer Lee Room. Here on Breakout Culture next week, we're going to be talking about summer festivals, incorporating everything from music and comedy to big ideas, and most taking place in gorgeous houses with big gardens or in lots of outdoor venues to take advantage of the little we have of our English summer weather. We're going to be talking to Otto English about the Byline Festival, to Joe Bowser about the Henley Festival, and bringing you news of the Cheltenham Music Festival, the Idler Festival, the Charleston Festival of the Garden, and more. So don't fail to tune in then so you can plan some really good summer fun.
If you enjoyed today, please make sure you follow us or subscribe. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love you to leave us a rating and a review, as it really helps others to find the show. And if there's anything at all in the arts and culture landscape you think we should be talking about or investigating, please send me an email to charlotte@countryandtownhouse.co.uk. And don't forget to follow Country and Townhouse on social media. You can find the links to all our accounts in the podcast show notes. We'll be back on air with a new podcast at the same time next Friday. Have a lovely weekend. Goodbye.